are listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here, lastwordonsports.com.
What's up, Internet? My name is Matt Pollard, and you are listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, brought to you by LastWordOnSoccer.com, Last Word on Sports Incorporated, the Beautiful Game Network, Roughneck Scarves, and Icarus FC. It is Tuesday, March 17th, 2020, officially calendar day 6, I believe, without Major League Soccer, and with the exception of the Russian Premier League and the Peruvian Penal League, pretty much no soccer going on. At least it is easily accessible to watch within the United States. We've got a great but very truncated show for you tonight, given the events of this past week. We'll be talking briefly about MLS and the whole of the sports world shutting down in a response to trying to mitigate the issues going on with COVID-19, the coronavirus, and certainly talking about a lot of things going on in U.S. soccer. And I've got two very informed and opinionated fire people to bring on. First, my co-host, Rachel Krieger. Rachel, how are you doing tonight, my friend?
Matt, I love that you brought up the Russian Premier League for me. That was absolutely excellent.
Well, you're the one who informed me. I didn't even know that they were still playing. So, yeah, we got that, and we got Ronaldinho playing in prison. That's it.
I didn't know they were playing until, like, it was funny. I saw your tweet, and then, like, I went on Instagram, and I saw it, and I was like, oh, look at that. I'm going to reply to Matt. But I'm doing good. Happy St. Patrick's Day in quarantine, everyone. Hoping everyone is staying safe out there. I can see Matt. I can't see our other friend who we will introduce in a second. Matt's wearing his green. I failed to wear my green, but I hope everyone is staying safe out there. I hope we're using lots of hand sanitizer, and this too shall pass.
Yes, I am wearing, since listeners, this is not a video call and you can't see this, I'm wearing my Celtic FC green and white hoops jersey. It's unfortunately the one from a couple years ago that has this semi-ugly Magners Irish cider on it, and it's the long sleeve one, so I am head to toe in green and white, and of course red on the top, representing my ginger brethren out there. But let me introduce our other co-host for tonight, Blaine Riffle. Blaine, you previously wrote for Last Word on Soccer. In the last couple of years, you've been doing more MLS fantasy stuff, and it's been at least a year since we had you on. Welcome back, and what have you been doing recently, MLS fantasy related, and obviously stuff post coronavirus shutdown?
Hey, thanks for having me back. Yeah, I miss writing for you guys. Just still don't have the time with the little one. Little one's kept me busy the last few years, but you can still find me on Twitter, RIFFBW. I work with MLS Fantasy Insider podcast, regular on that show now, and still do a little bit of writing for Fantasy Boss. I'm still on the Fantasy Boss Network. I just don't have as much time to write anymore. So those are the two things I've been doing lately.
Good stuff, Blaine. And then I know Reed put out a tweet a couple of days ago, and there was some good banter. Are you guys coming up with stuff to, you know, get us through the however long MLS isn't going to be back for?
Yeah, absolutely. MLS Fantasy Boss, if you hit him up on Twitter or myself, whatever topics the fans want, that's what we're going to be bringing for the next few weeks until MLS is back. I know last night we talked the history of the fantasy game in MLS. We're going to do part two next week and just kind of cover a little bit of everything. Star Wars, Marvel, you name it. It's on the list. If you want to talk about it, we've got it going.
Alrighty then. That spans the gamut as far as like nerddom podcasts are concerned. But let's get briefly to the news of the day, folks, and then we'll get into the main topic that we have for tonight's show. First of all, Rachel, I will throw it to you. We recorded last time on Monday, and it seemed like the league was going to go through with the third weekend of action in MLS Week 3. Obviously, within 48 hours of us recording our podcast, podcast that came out that Rudy Gobert, Utah Jazz player in the NBA, had tested positive. The NBA was shutting down, and then it was basically just like a newsreel after newsreel of just this league put out a press release saying that they're halting play for however such time. How did you react to it, and just general thoughts on MLS and the greater sports world shutting down for at least a month, probably longer, as it looks like right now?
I think, you know, first and foremost, the CDC is obviously knows what they're talking about, and they know how to, you know, kind of implement these new rules and laws, if you will, to and suggestions of staying indoors and canceling events with so many people, or I guess the proper word for this would be postponing them. So I think, you know, I was a little relieved when I saw that they weren't going to be playing. I think one of the things that really caught my eye that also works for the soccer world is when Charles Barkley said, when they canceled March Madness, we can't have these guys breathing on each other right now. And I think that obviously goes for a lot of sports because you're in close contact with people. So I think that MLS, and WSL has suspended their preseason. I think the leagues are doing, I think they're doing the right thing. I think that, you know, it's probably going to have to come down to a lot longer than 30 days. I don't know how much longer. I have no inside information. That's just a guess. I know the CDC said that, gatherings with more than 50 people should be off limits for the next 8 weeks. I believe they said. So I think that, I think MLS is going to follow suit with whatever NBA, NHL does. And, you know, NBA has been pretty much on top of it, and they've been talking about postponing events until June. So I think that MLS is going to follow suit. I can't really see them taking the lead right now, because I think NBA has kind of took this de facto role as the lead. But I think they just need to listen to the CDC, and you know, everything could change tomorrow. Everything could change in a week. Everything can change in a month. We just don't know right now. We just gotta put every ounce of faith that we have into the scientists who are making vaccines. But I think until the problem is contained, until it is figured out, I think that MLS and all of these leagues postponing events is absolutely the right call.
Blaine, your thoughts, and you've got a unique perspective relative to myself and Rachel, as obviously people are, as much as the virus is causing complications, the hysteria around it, and certainly the logistics of going to a grocery store and getting supplies, as someone with a young child, you know, what can you speak to how that has affected not only the sport world, but even just, you know, your own family within your house?
Yeah, all the postponements and everything seem really necessary. I was shocked as they started all rolling in. I know NCAA had said they were going to play in empty arenas and let the players go, have their tournament, and then to call everything off was kind of surprising to me. And I think some of that reaction fed into the way the masses have acted. I know I'm at a spot where we're out of eggs, out of toilet paper, out of meat. I mean, people just went crazy and bought everything. Thankfully, Lily's old enough and we were able to get the few things we need, but I can't imagine being one of those parents that needs formula and can't get it because people said, oh, formula lasts longer than milk, so we're going to buy formula, and just cleaning them out. So it's been a rough week. This area has been kind of hysterical, considering we've got one Walmart in town, and we serve several other smaller communities around us as well. So it's just been, it's been a little crazy around here. I hope things settle down. I was happy to hear them say today that people who need to eat will get to eat. Like, they're not going to take that out. There's going to be ways to get around that, and there's help out there if people need it. But yeah, it's just been a rough week all around.
Yeah, so it's been a rough week for a lot of people, but I think somebody who's certainly feeling the heat from some of his actions and maybe some of his negligence has been Carlos Cordero. So listeners, let us move on to the main topic that we have tonight, discussing the fallout from the U.S. Soccer's lawsuit with the U.S. Women's National Team regarding their collective bargaining agreement and ultimately the compensation to the Women's National Team players. Early last week, some of the paperwork and memorandums and litigation documents were made available, and that included some of the arguments that the Federation was making in the lawsuit that included some incendiary comments that led to a firestorm on social media and from news outlets, obviously affected the sponsors, and ultimately now at time of recording, Carlos Cordero has stepped down and is no longer the head of the U.S. Soccer Federation. In their litigation documents, this included arguments from the Federation saying that the men's national team players were bringing in more money based on a few metrics that they included, and also in that had a larger platform, more responsibility, and thus more pressures, and that that led to potentially them being deserving of higher compensation. And then also there were some indications in there from their arguments that the men's national team players are a little bit more skilled, independent of the competition they're playing on. So I'm just going to read a couple abbreviated quotes from the Sports Illustrated press release that they had on the U.S. Soccer court filing arguments. You can find this on SI.com. But so men's national team players have responsibilities for competing in multiple soccer tournaments with the potential for generating a total of more than $40 million in prize money for U.S. soccer every 4 years. That's a rough quote, listeners, based on how much money the winning federation of the Men's World Cup gets. Women's national team players compete in only one soccer tournament, the World Cup, every 4 years that has the potential to generate any prize money at all, and most recently the amount was 1/10 the amount for the men's national team player could generate. It's roughly around $3 to $4 million for the Women's World Cup winning federation. Men's national team plays in matches that are watched on television by many millions more people than the women's national team. The average viewership of the men's national team matches over the first couple of years is currently under the current women's national team CBA is nearly 5 times more than the highest women's national team matches, excluding Women's World Cup. They quote a few other figures that are based on TV ratings that effectively argue that the men are a little bit more than that, and that included men's national team games from the 2014 World Cup that exceeded many of the ratings from the 2019 Women's World Cup. And then they went on to argue that, if this will load properly, they went on to argue that also fan hostility, effectively arguing that the men's national team plays other national teams within the United States, and say they play Mexico and a bunch of Mexican fans show up, or they play El Salvador or Costa Rica or whomever, and they all show up, that leads to a more hostile or more difficult working environment that is deserving of higher compensation. Some of these statements are rooted in facts. I will say that some of what they are arguing is ignoring the fact that the women's national team has top dollar, you know, ticket sales and merchandise for some of their tournaments, including the She Believes Cup, which the women just pretty much, correct me if I'm wrong, Rachel, effectively power walked through winning the final effectively, other than that one game that required Julie Ertz to score at the death in that one. So effectively one of the arguments is behind the TV ratings. Those arguments kind of missed out on some of the metrics as far as the money coming into the federation, but I know that the women could play pretty much anywhere right now that soccer is played as far as a stadium venue. They could start the initial ticket prices at least $100, and they will sell out in hours, if not minutes. And the men's national team played their friendly against Costa Rica at the end of January camp, and there were 5,000 people there, and the secondary ticket market was going somewhere between $25 and $40. So that argument, while it makes sense as far as the overall TV ratings within the larger tournaments and the fact that the Men's World Cup is generally more popular and easier to market than the Women's World Cup, is incomplete from some of those. But Rachel, your initial reactions to this news when it broke, ultimately Carlos Cordero stepping down and all of the fallout from former players like DeMarcus Beasley and Landon Donovan coming out and going against it, and obviously the firestorm that Megan Rapinoe continues to spit out anytime anybody asks her about anything.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts, and you know, obviously we'll have time for everything, but and if I miss anything, we'll pick it up later. But my initial thoughts were, how dare you say that the women don't have as much skill as the men? At the end of the day, you know, I hate to really simplify it so much, but it's soccer. The women are doing the exact same thing that the men are doing. And I think when that press release came out with, you know, the skill level, and, you know, it just, it takes more to be a men's national player than it does a women's national team player. It was just, I mean, how much lower to me could the Federation go in regard to their language? You know, the women's national team has, you know, knocked on doors before to sell tickets. They know what it's like to work from the ground up. These players have, these current players have, you know, talked with players like Foudy and Mia Hamm and Christine Lilly, Brianna Scurry, all of these players that have, you know, set the stage for them to continue the fight. It's 2020. Equality really shouldn't be this big of an issue. I don't understand why it is. I understand that there's monetary factors involved, and that's coming from someone who hates numbers. But like you said, just regard to the ticket stuff, you know, you gotta look at that and think, well, the women are doing a little bit better in some areas than the men are. And one of the things that, you know, you brought up that really, you know, interests me is, you know, the atmosphere aspect of it. And I want to talk about the international aspect of it in regard to other teams coming in. Of course, when the U.S. men play Mexico, say in Los Angeles or, you know, Texas or whatnot, there's going to be a huge Mexican crowd. It's a huge, Mexican area with a lot of Latino soccer fans. And the men's national team for Mexico is a heck of a lot more marketed than the women's national team, just like in the United States. When the United States plays Trinidad and Tobago, Trinidad and Tobago gets marketing. Their women's team is barely up and running. So I think you have to look at that too. You know, women's soccer isn't there in a lot of areas because of certain federations not putting money into the program and all of this money that FIFA has said, hey, we're going to use it to help build women's national teams. And it's like, well, where's the progress? But anyway, for the U.S. women's national team, I just don't understand what the huge issue is with equal pay. If you have to get, give pay cuts to the men's national team to get them on that equal basis, or you got to give pay cuts to, you know, Greg Berhalter, even Vlatko Andonovsky, the U23, U21 coaches and whatnot, do it. Do what you need to do. I think, and Matt, you can quote me on this, and I don't think I would have ever said this before in my life. I agree with Hope Solo. Carlos Cordero is just a scapegoat for all of this. What he did, he deserved to be held accountable. He's the man up top. That press release obviously went through, went on his front desk, and he had to give it the okay. But at the end of the day, he's just one person. And Carlos Cordero, just like now Cindy Parlow Cohn, is not going to be the sole person to make all these decisions. There's going to be a board. There's going to be meetings. There's going to be a vote. And we'll get to that later. But I can't believe I'm saying this. I agree with Hope Solo that Carlos Cordero is just a scapegoat and there needs to be more done. Yeah, that's all I can think of right now, and I'm sure we'll get there in a minute, but it just astounds me that the skill comment was like.
Seems like Lily, you summoned Lily with Forrest Rachel.
Blaine, she's going to be in the fight too eventually when she's on the U.S. Women's National team.
I'll start by saying, you know, I haven't been on the side of U.S. soccer through this whole fight, but I have been fairly sympathetic to that side of the argument. Revenue disparity is a real thing. It's always going to be a thing in sports, and that has been the baseline for their argument the entire time. I don't trust U.S. soccer. Pick up where you left off, Rachel. I like to call them the soccer mafia. Between some and U.S. soccer and USSF and MLS, even in that, like, there's a monopoly at the top, and they, where what they say goes. And I don't trust that model. I don't trust any time a governing body like that gets that much power and say. So there's always been room for improvement. But when you get to the equal pay fight, U.S. soccer had been hiding behind the revenue disparity. The women make so much, the men make so much. You can only do so much with ticket sales, jersey sales. The women probably rival the men on that, but then the TV side comes in and the FIFA money comes in. and that money's never been equal. And it probably never will be equal. There's always going to be a difference. I would hope one day, with the women being the top of their game, they would be able to make more than the men. But that's just not the case at the moment. So I've sided with the CBA for a long time. The women sign their contracts. They sign that deal with U.S. Soccer. That's what they're supposed to get paid. And that's kind of, and every time it comes around, this is now two CBAs in a row. CBA is coming up to expire, and they've taken this "oh, poor me" stance, trying to get more money. I'm not opposed to them getting more money. I'm really not, but I haven't liked the optics that they've taken. They've seemed to from the outside looking in a little bit, they seem to play the victim card a little bit here, when maybe devil's advocate side, maybe they're not really that bad off. Now, I've called for a full audit of U.S. Soccer. I want to see what joint revenue has come in. If they're dealing with ESPN, and ESPN's writing a check for both men's and women's game at the same time, I think we need an audit to make sure that the appropriate amount of money is going to each side. Like, I'm 100% behind transparency in U.S. Soccer. But when you get to that, it's never sat right with me. And I'll probably sound like the bad guy on here, because I haven't felt that the women had a big leg to stand on. That all changed last week. You cannot talk skill and responsibility among players like that. You can't start chopping up players like that. If you want to talk about different levels of responsibility, you look at a guy who is starting and a captain of his team, and a woman who is starting and the captain of her team has more responsibility, deserves a bigger contract than a player who is maybe a fringe bench player, gets into the 18 every so often. Like, that's how you break up responsibility. Other than that, they're all soccer players. They're all there to do the same job. They have the same responsibility to win. You can't do that. Skill's a tough one for me. It is the same sport, but at the same time, I don't like to think of them as the same sport. We don't judge LeBron James and Tom Brady against each other. It's different sports. They're doing different jobs. I have a hard time judging the men and the women against each other when it comes to skill, because it is like playing two different sports. Biologically, it's not a level playing field. And it's never going to be. So why should we expect a woman to put up the exact same stats as a man? Why should we expect that same type of skill? It's a different enough game. It's two separate skill sets. And anytime you want to try to cross that and say, oh, well, this person's better than that, and that's why they deserve more money, you can't judge that. How many men on the men's national team can score an Olympico? I know Megan Rapinoe's done it in a competitive game. Like, she was one of the first women to ever score one in a competitive game. Some of the stuff that's happened in the women's game has been surprising, different things that we haven't seen before, and we're still getting a lot of those firsts. Honestly, I would say the women are more skilled in their field. They're the best team in the nation, or the best team in the world. And they're the most skilled in their sport at this time. Back-to-back World Cup champs speaks for itself on that.
I agree with you on a number of different points, Blaine. I will certainly say I have been on team hashtag audit U.S. soccer for a couple of years now. I would say that argument for me was initially rooted into, I want to say it was a Grant Wall SI report 3 or 4 years ago, saying that like that U.S. soccer was running on like an excess of like a multiple tens. I think it was $100 million, or it might have been rounded up. Maybe I'm misremembering that, but in any case, effectively saying that the U.S. soccer had this huge surplus of cash from a couple of different revenues, and they weren't really sure what to do with it. And that was in the midst of the NASL potentially folding, you know, obviously needs for changing the structure of the game at the youth level as far as pay to play was concerned. And we weren't really sure what that looked like. So that was the reference rate upon which I said, let's audit U.S. soccer. But okay, you want to say, yes, the FIFA numbers are going to be different. It is unlikely, certainly in the playing lifetimes of any of the current players on the men's or the women's team that have been called up in the last year, that there will come a you know, back-to-back World Cups, men's and women's, in which the revenue is roughly the same. You know, about a billion people watch the World Cup final on the men's side. You're looking at about a billion total eyeball game events for the entirety of the women's game. So, okay, you can't separate the FIFA event in the event that the men's national team doesn't blow it against Trinidad and Tobago and makes it to Qatar. And in the event that they win the World Cup, you're looking at about $40 million roughly that the federation's going to get, and most of that is going to go to the players. But I agree with you, Blaine, that certainly there's some more. We need to peel back the layers and actually have accountants go through and do everything of when you look at the TV revenue, when you look at the ticket sales and everything, how different are those? But even when we look at that, and I think, Rachel, you told me about this a couple of years ago, that even just the structure and how the players are getting paid, you know, the women, they don't get compensated beyond, you know, having their travel and their expenses and per diem accounted for unless they actually get a result in the game. The men get paid for an appearance or even just making a 23-man roster and getting called up even if they end up losing. So even within the structure, assuming that the revenues were different, women are getting compensated differently and they have to achieve more in order to even catch up to the men. So ultimately, even if you want to say that the revenues are different, and that might be rooted in the popularity of the sport or, you know, responsibility because the men have a higher platform than the women do, you know, ultimately even the rules of the game that they're playing by as far as how compensation works is rooted in the patriarchy. And so I think U.S. soccer for an extended period of time was losing the battle in the court of public opinion under the specter of, you know, the revenues are not quite there. And it's very, very clear from the documentation we've seen in the last 2 weeks that, yes, some of that is them trying to make an argument as far as revenue, but ultimately all of that's drawing back to the patriarchy's in play. We can't do anything about the patriarchy, or because of the patriarchy, the men should be compensated more, when part of that is outside of their control. Part of that is a function of FIFA, and maybe that is influenced by patriarchy, but they are themselves, as a federation, choosing to engage in that in the midst of a men's national team that is still widely discussed at a large part of the fan base, you know, a fan base that I'm not sure is going to be able to get over or move past what happened in, you know, against Trinidad and Tobago a couple of years ago, if and or until the men make it and then actually start playing the World Cup in 2022 versus the women's national team that have basically been on a warpath in social media and on the field of play basically since the 2015 World Cup, and pending coronavirus were in position to be a favorite for the gold medal going into the Olympics. And obviously they would have been, had they won it, or if they do win it, would be the first women's national team to go back to back between World Cup and Olympics and everything. And so any form of veil that I had, and certainly you mentioned as well, Blaine, of, oh, maybe the revenues aren't there. No, U.S. soccer and their legal team was willing to lose the court, lose the battle in the court of public opinion, and prop up the patriarchy. Dare I say, step on the soapbox of the patriarchy exists, and we're just going to let it happen as natural in order to win a court case. And in that, like, I think anybody, including you, Blaine, who was kind of on the fence or wanted more information, was, no, you guys are scum. We need to burn it down. Carlos Cordero's falling on his sword. Obviously, the sponsors had some things to say about that. With that, I'll throw it back to you, Rachel. Cordero steps down. Cindy Parlow-Cohn, who, I'm going to be honest, her name I had not heard until this past Wednesday, is taking over as president. What do things look like for her being the interim, and what the heck does she do from here, given that the lawsuit still has to get sorted out and that there's going to be another election in 2 years?
Yeah, so to be honest with you, Sydney Parlow-Cohn wasn't a name that I was entirely familiar with until she, you know, got the vice president slot. I kind of looked her up a little bit. But, you know, if you get an endorsement from Julie Foudy and Mia Hamm, I think you're good people. So she's got some people backing her up in U.S. soccer, obviously, some people who got votes and whatnot. So, I mean, what we have to do right now is give her a chance. I think one of the things that I've seen on the Twitter world is a lot of people unsettled about the fact that she didn't come out with a statement, you know, kind of condemning the U.S. soccer language. But at the same time, you know, that puts her in a very difficult position too. That's her, I don't want to say employer because I, you know, as vice president, I think that's like a part-time thing. So at the time, you know, her part-time employer, she doesn't want to, you know, you don't want to be seen as a traitor almost. I think she's kind of in a situation where she's a former U.S. women's national team player. So, you know, she's going to have that loyalty. She was one of those players that was going around and knocking on doors to sell tickets to a Victory Tour match. But there's also a little bit of loyalty to U.S. soccer as well. So I think she's kind of the knot in the middle of a rope being pulled by the U.S. women's national team and by U.S. soccer. So I think that right now it's a little complicated. Obviously, they're going to give her a little bit to, you know, kind of feel out the position, figure things out. As U.S. soccer president, you're not just working with the national team, national teams, plural. You're working with all the youth stuff. You're working with NWSL. You're working with Major League Soccer and, you know, these huge programs. And it's overwhelming. It's a lot. And this is somebody who went from doing it part-time and who was coaching at UNC to now, this is it, sister. You're in full-time and you better buckle up and get ready. Real quick before we move on, I just want to say in regard to a couple of Blaine's points, I 100% agree with the competition level. That is one thing that I've said over the years, Matt. You know that I've said it. The competition between the men, between who the men play and the women play, extremely different. Like I said with my Trinidad and Tobago example, with the men's team, you get an actual decent program, something that's pretty well funded. But then with the women's team, it's like, it's almost like a startup almost. The World Cup this last year was the first time that it was like really, really competitive and not just United States, Japan, France and England. There were some real big name competitors last year and it was great to see, but there's still so much catching up to do in continents like Africa, South America, and right here in CONCACAF. There's so much work to be done. And then another thing I wanted to mention was the TV stuff. It's tough. It's really tough because, you know, the She Believes Cup, some of those matches were played on ESPN News. You're having your U.S. women's national team play on ESPN News. Are you serious? They're World Cup winners. Get them on big ESPN. Even ESPN2, I don't care. Fox Sports, whatever. I mean, heck, look, you know, making this part short, look at the NWSL and the fight that they had to do to get put on CBS and also Twitch. You know, it's not, they don't get stuff handed to them. I don't want to compare like the men because I don't like the fans that say that. And Matt knows that I do not like the fans that say that. So I just wanted to kind of put that out there. Totally agree with Blaine on the level of the playing field. It is a work in progress. And like I mentioned earlier, FIFA, I want to see what you're doing with this money you're pledging to these low funded teams.
Blaine, your thoughts on some of the things that we've said and certainly the current state of the Federation and whether or not, you know, more desks need to be cleaned out before this gets any better.
I'll start with that last one. Yeah, definitely need more desks cleaned out. There needs to be a change in leadership, a change in style up there. One big thing that I saw last week that shocked me was Don Garber's response from MLS, and he put the MLS letterhead on it. That was huge. He is part of that inner circle, and for him to take those shots publicly is a big step in breaking up that alliance between all of them. Like I said, they act like a mafia half the time. When one of them goes, they all vote alongside it. And that's what makes me worried about Cohn. I don't know that she's going to be much different or if she's just going to be ousted as soon as she tries to speak up. Like there, I don't have a lot of faith in that institution at the moment to make changes. I sit here, listen to everything that's said, and I still worry about that CBA. The women get different treatment, but the women get different treatment because they signed a CBA that says they get different treatment. I know, I don't remember the exact numbers, but I know a set number of women, I think it's around 20, get $100,000 salary a year as part of the CBA. And that's your core of the national team. That's play, not play, injured, whatever it is. They get a salary for being part of that national team. And then they get game checks on top of that. Some of the other ladies that come in get game checks for what they do. I believe when I was doing the research the last time, the women get paid for showing up to camp, The men do not. And the men, if the men show up to camp and go to the next tournament that's coming after that, if they don't make the 18, they don't collect a game check. If the women show up in camp, they get a check. So there's some differences there. There's some benefits both directions. It does lend for the top earning men to definitely make more money than the women, even if all money was equal. Both sides got the exact same starting dollar point. The men's collective bargaining agreement means their top earners will make more money because of the way the women divide up their money according to their contract. So that all has to be there. I'm really worried that U.S. soccer is going to give in to the women on the equal pay thing and say, okay, we'll make sure Megan Rapinoe gets the same amount of money as a man does, but we're not funding NWSL anymore. We're not giving you salaries. Go work, go play professionally. Like, there's all these other things where they've been throwing money at that they've been using as an excuse and saying that's part of what we're paying you. I'm afraid that's where the hardball is going to be played. And they're going to start taking away all of these other benefits. And I don't want to see it for somebody like Alex Morgan, who happens to be pregnant right now. If they said, no, you don't get a salary, no, you don't get money for showing up to camp, no, you have to make the team, Alex Morgan's national team money goes away. I think she's still on salary. She's getting paid maternity leave right now. Great thing for the women to have. Great for those injuries when somebody doesn't, when you just count on that money to make your living. I know, like, there are some really nice benefits there, and I'd hate to see those go away because this fight takes a nasty turn and heads that direction.
Yeah, we'll set on that front, Blaine. I should add one addendum or one addition as well. The $100,000, that's players who are with the U.S. Women's National Team who are playing within the NWSL. So a crude way you could describe this to someone who just generally knows about MLS but not about the whole U.S. soccer pyramid is basically U.S. soccer is kind of funding DP players who are Women's National Team stars playing for NWSL teams. It's interesting that that's not something that's been discussed. Us, Blaine, and as much as that we're talking about this, it seems to be kind of two forces on this. It's the women's national team versus U.S. soccer, with kind of the men cheering them on, as we've seen more recently with them individually and collectively come out with statements. I'm surprised that, like, the NWSL isn't being brought into this as probably maybe a third party or one that's kind of propping it up, but also kind of saying, yeah, we could put in a little bit more money on the women's side to compensate them from the club level. It's, correct me if I'm wrong, Rachel, I believe, isn't the base salary for the NWSL like $40,000 a year, so not even as much as the senior roster player minimum in MLS?
That is around the maximum. I think they raised it this year to 48, and I want to say the minimum is either 18,000 or 20,000.
Okay, but yeah, so 18,000 to 20,000, like, with all due respect, bad. Like, that is, you have multiple roommates in Portland and you're all taking the one car that you have to get to the Thorns facility. And so having that on the same team where Tobin Heath has that is a little bit of disparity, but that's another can of worms that we don't quite have enough time to talk about. But I think the circumstances within the NWSL as it exists within the U.S. soccer frame and as it is an alternative income standpoint to compensate the women's players is certainly something that's a problem. Where if you look at it, you know, like, yeah, Michael Bradley might not have the same rules as play as, say, Megan Rapinoe does, but he's getting multiple million dollars. You know, he's gotten like $20 million a year USD, or $20 million total USD from his time for Toronto FC. So certainly the men's players are okay financially because they're getting way more at the club level than you will see at the women's level. That's another thing that you were kind of talking about, Rachel, that's a disparity that, you know, is that women's soccer, both in America and in the world, has made progress on, but still certainly has room for improvement in that regard. I agree with you, Blaine. I think anybody who had anything to do with the patriarchal comments that ultimately made its way into the litigation documents and court filings, those people have to be out. You know, if that's something that you genuinely believe in your soul, you do not belong in U.S. soccer. And if you are someone who is responsible for that, like Carlos Cordero, who's kind of arguing you know, yeah, I didn't really see them. Okay, if you weren't reading the stuff and you weren't aware of those things, then you're incompetent and you should also go. So I would like to see in whatever happens, both within the lawsuit and within the election, and this is kind of generally within U.S. soccer, someone who's simply going to hold people accountable and do things from a fair standpoint and not just completely burn the bridges with fans that I would say most of Carlos Cordero, and I'll include the back third of Sunil Gulati's tenure as president, would have been, just in terms of how they manage things. And I will extend that also to the men's side of there's kind of been a good old boy approach from Cordero gets elected as president. He brings in Ernie Stewart. They've got a good relationship to where there's not a lot of accountability on that front. And then Ernie Stewart brings in his guy, Greg Berhalter. So whoever comes in as president, whether that's Cohn writing whatever successes or, you know, mitigated damage from the lawsuit happen to a presidency, come 2022, I want the president of U.S. soccer to be someone who is going to hold technical and financial personnel accountable, who is going to be a fair and impartial juror, and is not going to completely say, we're doing this no matter what the fan base says, and completely lose the fan base, or just, you know, either on the men's team or the women's team. Because I think too often they've been protecting a certain part of their own house, voluntarily burning down the other house, while an angry mob is sharpening the pitchforks outside them. And that's just led to a toxic environment, both internally and in the public sphere. And so I would like to see that cleanse, and I would like to see just somebody who's going to hold people accountable and put people in a position where they're going to do their job on all fronts, you know, let alone all the other things that U.S. soccer has to deal with. Rachel, any of your thoughts? And I know we've only got a couple minutes with you, Blaine, so we'll let you go after Rachel, and then you can get in your last words and any other plugs that you have.
Just wanted to double check my numbers. The maximum salary in the NWSL is $50,000 and the minimum is $20,000. They raised it up this year. Just final thoughts. I really hope that there is a correct and healthy conclusion that comes about all of this. I hope that U.S. soccer learns their language and their PR people learn how to write better press releases without offensive language. With that, Blaine?
Yeah, I think one step that I would love to see, Matt, kind of where you left it off, is I wanted to see some dissolved. I can't see what good they're doing at this point. Split U.S. soccer off and let them kind of do their own thing and clean house a little bit, get some more player input in there, past and present, really, players. I know, I think, cannot remember which former men's player was up, got a few votes. I think Winalda got a few votes at the end of last year. Yeah. I'd love to see somebody more in line with that come through, but yeah, it's definitely time to clean house. And I really hope this fight doesn't turn nasty. It's the state of women's soccer across the world right now. We have a lot of, amateur part-time players. It's really been hard to be a full-time soccer player in this game right now. And I know U.S. soccer had really put an emphasis on it. And I hope that the equal pay thing doesn't come back to bite the efforts made to make women full-time players, because that's really what we need around the world, is an avenue for these women to go play professionally and have that be their full job. I know $20,000 a year in most U.S. and almost every major city is not enough to live on without roommates, without some help, possibly without a second job.
Yeah, no, we'll set on that front, Blaine. You know, I think the proverbial chickens came home to roost after the men's national team failed to qualify from the World Cup on the men's side. And I feel like this was kind of a similar moment of everybody within the community, within the fan base, and certainly within the federation, having to take a hard look in the mirror and finally realize all the things that have been going wrong. And I think anybody who had, you know, the wool over their eyes has had that almost violently and involuntarily ripped away within the last week. I was hoping that the aftermath of the failures on the men's side competitively in 2018 would have led to corrective change. I would say that there's been progress, but there's still room for improvement and other things that just systematically within the system that weren't really working, and areas in which people who could have impacted things weren't willing to risk their job or falling on their sword, or, you know, completely losing, having their confidence from their people around them or their superiors lost it to that. I feel like now that, like, there's no other choice at this point. It's, you know, the things, everything's going to continue burning, and that's just going to root out the infection going on within U.S. soccer, or somebody's going to have to take the action to say, okay, we're cutting out this scar tissue and then building up from the front. So I think this was finally the last domino to fall, where whatever happens in this lawsuit, this stuff is actually going to get sussed out. And I am hopeful that this was the final domino to fall, to where ultimately this is going to lead to effective change from the top. And that's actually going to trickle down to the bottom on both sides competitively, and certainly down the pyramid in terms of the other, issues that are going on at the foundation of this. We saw somewhat of a pivot of that, and I think it was clear there were still things that weren't really working with that. And with Cordero out, I would hope that everybody involved within the Federation is looking at the 2022 election cycle very, very differently, and is certainly taking it from the standpoint of this is going to have a lasting impact. There was an opportunity to correct a lot of issues that were not taken in hindsight 2020 with the election of Carlos Cordero. I hope actions are taken such that on the technical side for the men's, things stabilize and continue to improve with accountability on that front, and certainly with the women's team are given all the opportunities, technically, competitively, and financially, to continue progress as the crown jewel of this, and as of the Federation, of a major aspect of women's sport within the entire sporting landscape. And these players are continued to give an opportunity, as someone like Megan Rapinoe, who has plenty of responsibility as, you know, the face of the franchise, someone who's been a champion of this, and as a non-heterosexual, non-male playing in a sport, because God forbid she doesn't have as much responsibility as a role model and as an athlete as some of the men's players. With that, folks, let's go to last words. Blaine, I will throw it to you. Where can people find you on the Twitterverse, and is there anything you have to say that you have not already said?
Yeah, you can find me at RIFFBW on Twitter, or just tweet at MLS Fantasy Boss or MLSFI. I don't run those other two, but anything that goes there, I usually see. That's been my big hangout. You can join us any Monday night for, we do a live stream to YouTube of our podcast and then produce that. And we love to hang out, talk with anybody. As long as MLS is shut down, it's open soccer discussion. So, or open discussion on really any topic. We've discussed playing board games as well, but, I would love to continue the women's pay debate over there. Reed's a really good moderator for those things. And then, yeah, I'll leave it with, you know, we talk about different responsibilities a little bit. Our women are recognized worldwide. Any young girl that wants to play the game knows the U.S. women's team. We've got players recognized worldwide. We've only got a handful of men that are recognized worldwide. So if you want responsibility, role models for the world, Rapinoe and Alex Morgan, a few other names you want to throw up there, they are recognized very similar to Messi and Ronaldo around the world, just in their game.
Rachel, I'll throw it to you. Where can people find you on Twitter? And do you have any last words?
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at Rachel Kruger, 2 A's, not one. My long-lost wish has finally come. There is more than one Costa Rican in the NWSL. I don't know why I have such an infatuation with Costa Rica, but I do, and it's great, and their national anthem is awesome. So, Shirley Cruz, who is like, you know, Blaine just mentioned Megan Rapinoe being the face of the franchise. Well, that's Shirley Cruz for Costa Rica. She is the legendary midfielder for them. She is so ridiculously good. She spent a lot of time in France with Lyon and with Paris Saint-Germain before going to China and then coming back home to Costa Rica. I was a little shocked about the announcement when Reign FC announced their new head coach. He had coached Shirley Cruz with both Lyon and PSG. So, you know, kind of put in the back of my mind, maybe there's a chance. But she was very adamant about staying in Costa Rica and helping build up the women's game down there. So I was really surprised that she is heading to the NWSL. But I'm really excited about it. And with Raquel Rodriguez being with Portland, that is going to make that Cascadia rivalry so much fun. I'm already geeking out. And also, I just wanted to mention one thing that I want people to know, and I am going to be mean for a second and call out the U.S. Women's National Team stands, bracing myself for the Twitter impact. Be nice to the male players. It is really not their fault what the Federation decides. And, you know, Matt, you know this very well. I hate the comparison game, Megan Rapinoe can do this and Tim Ream can't do that. You know, I had to mention Tim Ream because, you know, you're president of the fan club. But, be nice to the players. It's not their fault. And there are players who are coming out and speaking on it, but it's also not their